This is Bruce Bostic with Labor Creates All Wealth. And we're here with Tim Berge. Tim is the relatively new president of the AFL-CIO for Ohio. And Tim, we haven't had a chance to really talk since you managed to get that job. I didn't know whether I should offer you thanks and support or condolences. You just jumped right into the fire, didn't you?
Well, we had quite a tumultuous year last year, and we spent all year trying to protect workers' rights and the middle class. So I'm glad that we're getting a chance now to kind of catch up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't entirely new. You got some pretty good genes operating here. And have Tim, your father was AFL-CIO president here and was a dear friend, is a dear friend of mine. And they went through the issue, another issue, too, a number of years ago. Was that something that kind of, you know, you were able to take some lessons from that fight over compensation and carry it into this referendum?
Well, both my parents, my father and my mother, who was an activist and a social worker in Marion, Ohio. But as a third-generation steelworker, you're brought up to understand the collective action and the power of one. And that nothing happens for working people without a struggle and without making it happen. Mm-hmm. And also, as a grandson of a coal miner, you know, those industrial unions really showed the way for solidarity and to fight for what's right. So years of that sort of training and upbringing, and then 9 years with the state AFL-CIO here before I took over as president January of last year of 2011, you know, has prepared me as good as you can be prepared. But
you couldn't have done something else if you wanted to, could you?
Well, you know, you never really know until you're tested and you're thrown into the fire. And because of the support of all the unions in the state of Ohio and our executive board and the 20 labor councils around the state, we came together and rallied around an issue to protect workers' rights last year. And as a result, now we need to follow that up with victories for working families in the middle class this year.
This is going to be a tough year. Questions I hear quite a bit, Tim, is people are asking, you know, we had the huge We Are Ohio coalition and really went, as you described, way beyond labor's ranks to fight to protect working families who were not members of unions as well as those that are. And Where do we stand now in terms of holding that kind of unity together and moving forward now that we're facing new threats?
Well, these major right-wing investor class extreme attacks that we saw last year provided us a tremendous opportunity to have a conversation about the value of collective bargaining and workers' rights. Whether you belong to a union or not, what's created the middle class in Ohio has always been the ability to negotiate for wages and benefits, retirement security. And not only has it helped if you're a union member, but what non-union and working class people across the state of Ohio realized last year was if you take away those collective bargaining rights at the workplace, not only does it hurt the union member by driving down wages and benefits and working conditions, but it's going to have a ripple effect across the community. And because of this this extreme political overreach by the governor last year, we had an educational opportunity to talk to Ohioans for about 9 months last year about the value of collective bargaining. And anytime you have a chance to really have an honest conversation about the value of workers' rights and collective bargaining, we come out ahead on that. And that's exactly what happened last year.
And now we're facing the threat of these right-wing corporate elements bringing up this so-called right-to-work law. Up until now, up until very recently, I know that you're aware, right to work for less was law of the land in the Deep South. And then just within the last year or 2 years here, we've seen it hit us in Oklahoma and other places, and they're really clearly going after us on this law, aren't we? And Indiana was the first industrial northern state to be hit with right to work.
Well, yeah, you're right. Let's remind your listeners that in 1958, they passed a right to work law in the state of Ohio. That's the year the AFL and the CIO merged to fight this this right-wing corporate extreme attack on workers' rights. And we overturned the right-to-work law in 58. We haven't seen a serious push on it in Ohio since then. So it's the same sort of right-wing elements supporting the super wealthy and the investor class and extreme right-wing groups that are pushing this again here in Ohio. As Ohioans get to understand what this is, and really what it is it prohibits the ability of a union that's been already democratically elected into a workplace. It prohibits that union from having a negotiation with the employer about having a union shop or an agency shop. And when you have a union in place, that union has to represent all the workers, whether they pay their fair share of union dues or not. So certainly this is going to be a matter of fairness. And again, let's not forget that right-to-work states that do not have the ability for these unions to negotiate with the employer for an agency shop or a union shop, these states are having the toughest time economically. Right-to-work states, when you look at the last four quarters of unemployment data, 7 of the 10 highest unemployment states are right-to-work states.
There's no job creation. Yeah, I didn't know that. What was very interesting, the Columbus Dispatch, which hasn't always been really friendly to labor, recently had an editorial by its editor, Halleck, I believe, where he spoke of right-to-work states, on the average, that a worker in a right-to-work state, on the average, makes over $5,300 less every year. And that's non-union workers as well as union workers. While they gear it as an attack on big labor and unions have gone backwards, and what we've really seen is really a loss of income across the board. Is it?
There's no question about it, and don't take our word for it. Look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is the honest assessment of wages and benefits, and right-to-work states, workers there, whether you're union or non-union, make dramatically less amount of money, wages, dramatically less benefits, it's not good for the worker, it's not good for the community at large. And again, what this is simply an attack on workers' rights, and simply to drive down wages and benefits, and to further tilt the field politically for the super wealthy and multinational corporations.
Well, since you bring up the political aspect of it, this is certainly this year we're going to be immersed in politics all year, certainly. And you had mentioned the last time that right-wing corporate forces tried to force this type of law on us. I know that this was a little before my time as well, but clearly in labor history, it was a time where everybody came together. We defeated them, as we said. But also, coming off that fight, we elected Gilligan and had a real sweep that was pro-labor and were able to do some real positive things in the state. Anything in your crystal ball say that we have the possibility of emerging out of this fight with that kind of coalition, you think? Or where do we stand, Tim?
I make a point not to make predictions on elections.
Super Bowls, right?
Issues or candidates. However, yeah. I expect the same sort of coming together of Ohioans as what we saw in the fight to defeat Senate Bill 5 and Issue 2. What this right-to-work effort is, if they do in fact get this to the ballot, last year, Senate Bill 5 sought to attack police officers and nurses and teachers and firefighters and everyone in public service under the collective bargaining law. Well, this not only attacks those workers again, but it attacks the private sector workers, steel workers, machinists, auto workers, plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians. So this is Senate Bill 5 on steroids. So we certainly will be expecting the same sort of coming together, the same sort of solidarity, not only in the trade union movement, but for all workers who are in the middle class or aspire to be in the middle class, that this is something that's going to lower the bar for all workers and continue the race to the bottom that we're seeing with our economies, not only here in the U.S. far too often, but around the world. And I believe once Ohioans understand what this is that they're going to rally together to defeat it should they be able to get it on the ballot.
Well, you know, there seems to be, you know, if you're watching political developments, for many of us, there seems to be really an emerging of some real differences in the corporate camp. You know, the statement out of Kasich's office was interesting, I guess, when they asked him about right to work. His official statement was that we don't really see that as something that, how did he put it? We don't really see that as timely at this point or something. And this ultra-right-wing takeover Republican Party may have some adverse effects for them and could help us. Do you see that, or would you agree or disagree there?
Well, Governor Kasich and other Republican leaders in the state have made statements, some cryptic, but certainly indicating that at a minimum, the time is not a good time to bring this forward. You know, we're Ohioans desperately are looking for cooperation, for business and labor to come together, Democrats and Republicans to come together to really have a discussion about job creation and moving our economy, not these further attacks on workers. So, you know, I think if this were to make it to the ballot, I think it would be a political decision backed by the Republican Party and large corporations. Mm-hmm. I just can't guarantee whether that's in fact going to happen or not.
Yeah, we just recently saw a poll. It was a Columbus Dispatch poll, and they were discussing it last night at a Labor Federation meeting that I guess it was 54% of Ohioans polled said they would favor right to work. Now, you know, my gut level feeling is we've seen those kind of numbers before, and when you say right to work without explaining it, of course everybody wants a right to work, and especially now. Do you see that as something that's cause for alarm or a cause to throw up our hands and give up, or this is something we can overcome, you know, as we educate people?
Well, issues like this take a tremendous amount of education, and from what I understand, the poll didn't surprise me. I think we were looking at similar numbers back in 58. It's a very complicated issue that we'll have to boil down to its essence, which is, again, taking away workers' rights, which is going to lower wages and benefits and working conditions for all working Ohio families in Ohio that are in the middle class or seek to be in the middle class. The poll was leading. There's no question about that. The question that they were asking the respondents were, and Indiana just passed a right to work law that made it illegal for to belong to a union as a condition of employment. Well, they didn't go on to say that whether these were unions already democratically elected into the workplace or not. So of course, not many folks are going to say that union should be a condition of employment unless you already have the union voted in there, right? So a terribly leading question, but we're not going to get into the methodology of that poll. What we're going to get into is educating our members, educating them at the work site, educating them at the front door, educating them in all facets of what this is. And when we do that, our membership responds. And not only that, but the general public will respond against these attacks on workers' rights, just like they did with Senate Bill 5. That I'm confident of.
Well, you kind of led off the discussion today, Tim, with a quote that I've liked and have repeated many times, that these attacks on us have given us an opportunity to really go out and talk to the wider public about the positives of the labor movement and what it means for us. Do you feel like, you know, coming off issue two, are we really at a higher political level now? Do you think that fight kind of armed us ideologically? Thank you, my friend. Again, and moving forward. So I guess that's a question.
Yeah, no, politically I'm not sure, but in terms of issue education and economics education, there's no question that Ohioans responded overwhelmingly in favor for the type of worker rights that the trade union movement has fought for and won over these years, whether it's safety law, whether it's unemployment law, whether it's injured worker law, whether it's wage law. Ohioans, whether in a union or not, believe that that's a favorable role that unions play. And as a result, it's made their work experience better, their community better, the economy better. So I think we have a better understanding from the general public in Ohio about what labor economics are, and what, you know, when there's simply a political attack that seeks to divide worker against worker, and there is enough information out there to let Ohioans come to their own conclusion, they're going to make the right decision. And that's what happened last year on Senate Bill 5 and Issue 2. And if they're intent on moving this anti-worker right-to-work bill, then it's our responsibility to make sure that not only labor but the general public really understand what this is. And when we do that, that they'll come around to reject this.
You know, economically, we'd heard for years the old expression that a rising tide floats all boats. But it seems in a recent period, you know, while many of the Republican candidates talk about not following Europe, it seems as though their approach is let's follow Europe and attack workers and have austerity instead of floating all boats. Do you see at this point that going through these struggles that we've begun to get to the wider public that we need to have funds and resources get down to the people who are hurt, that people can't buy things unless they have unemployment compensation, unless we have jobs, or are we still stuck in that austerity mode, you think?
Well, I mean, it's an excellent question. I think we did make progress last year with all the education and information and the rejection of Senate Bill 5 Issue 2. You know, over the last four centuries, history has told us that unless you have a worker economic model that supports a production-oriented economy where workers can share in the wealth that they're creating, so they can then, you know, have a reasonable middle-class lifestyle and have some expendable income to support the local businesses in their community, that's the economic model that works. And unfortunately, for a good 30 years in this country, we've backed an investor class economy, mm-hmm. One that says if we take care of the folks at the very top, the super wealthy and the large corporations, that somehow, some way, that wealth and benefit is going to rain down on all of us. And 30 years of that thinking has got us into the mess that we're in right now. And slowly but surely, it's our responsibility to educate and elect the public officials who are going to change policies, okay, change our trade policies, change our tax policies that stops incentivizing offshoring and outsourcing of our jobs and bringing this work back here, investing in our workers. If we don't invest in our workers and we simply only invest in the super wealthy and the Wall Street investment firms and multinational corporations, then we're not going to get out of the cycle that we're in.
I think there's some movement in that direction publicly, too, especially with President Obama beginning to develop a fight. The question of, on this particular issue, it's very interesting that Governor Scott Walker, while he touts jobs, I just recently saw some figures that his austerity program, which was passed in Wisconsin, led to Wisconsin being a state where they've lost jobs now over the last 7 months, every month. Have you seen those?
Well, there's a role of the federal and state and local governments in supporting its workforce and investing in workers. It's twofold. You've got to do put policies in place that stand up for American workers. Okay, you've got to invest in them, much in the way Germany invests in their workers. If you want to call that protectionism, then go ahead and call it whatever you want to call it. But there's no reason why we should be competing unfairly with the rest of our trading partners across the globe. So we've got to have policies that invest in our American worker. And we also have to have public spending you know, help us with infrastructure. I mean, where would we be if we wouldn't have bailed out the auto industry? I mean,
that's very interesting. Romney likes to tout his Michigan roots, but he really seems to have run up against a real problem here now that the auto industry is coming out the other end in good shape, isn't it?
Well, Mitt Romney and others in his party had no problem bailing out the banks, and that was a hard pill to swallow, whether it was necessary or not. That we can, you know, we can have an honest argument about that, but those folks that had no problem bailing out the investment and financial industry then wouldn't want to support the workers and help the auto industry. And thank God we did, because in Ohio, that's where we're seeing some of the resurgence here is through our auto industry and those suppliers, those downstream suppliers in the auto industry. So there's certainly a role, not only in supporting supporting our workers in tough times, but investing our workers through procurement policies and tax policies that actually help Ohioans get on the job and compete with other states and other countries. So there's a role for that.
Well, just shifting slightly and as we run down here, one of the problems we see going into this political year among labor and wider activists politically has been the passage of 190 SB 194, and steps taken not just in Ohio but across the country to suppress voting after years and years and years of struggles to get past Jim Crow laws and find ways for new voter registration. The first time in my lifetime, certainly, I see real steps being taken to try to deny people the right. And do you see that as something that could harm our ability to move forward here? And what do we see that we need to do to take guys on?
The Republican leadership in this state last year came, you know, at a time when we needed to work together to create jobs. Out of the gate came after collective bargaining, workers' rights, overtime pay, tried to suppress the vote. And they were successful on a couple fronts. Now, we were successful because Ohioans rejected it, Senate Bill 5. At the same time they were passing Senate Bill 5, they passed House Bill 194, which would limit the early voting opportunities that Ohioans have and have worked so well since we put them in several years ago. Now, while we were fighting the Senate Bill 5 fight, we also got enough signatures to put a referendum on the ballot for this year to repeal House Bill 194, which again is simply just looking to suppress the vote for no reason whatsoever. There's no voter fraud in the state. There's no reason why you would want to limit the early voting opportunities, either in person or by mail, which House Bill 194 does. So we're seeing all sorts of suppression of rights, whether it's at the workplace or voting rights.
Kind of like passing a law to make sure we don't have Bengal tigers in Columbus running the streets, right?
Well, you're not going to draw me into that debate, are you?
maybe it was the wrong analogy here, but I was going to say it wasn't. We don't see any more Bengal tigers than we do see voter fraud. It was the analogy, but I won't make you take a position there, Tim. But thanks. Finally, as you said specifically, labor has really reached out to the community around this voter fraud issue, isn't there? There's something that this may be an issue that we can really branch out on.
Well, we'd like, you know, there's debate right now. The Republicans know they've stepped in it again. That's why they're talking about repealing House Bill 194 so it doesn't go on the ballot.
Well, they kind of like to repeal it but not repeal it, right?
Well, they'd like to replace it with something else. So we're not sure where that's going to go. What we know right now is that we're on the ballot. Let the voters decide. Mm-hmm. Once the voters understand this is simply going to suppress the vote at a time when we should be encouraging our civic responsibility and involvement in voting and giving folks opportunities who work hard every day to have more opportunities to go and vote at the local board of elections or by mail, and the ways that it's been working well over the last couple of election cycles. So once they understand that, again, this is just simply a political effort to suppress the vote, I'm confident that they'll reject it.
Well, yeah, appreciate that, and it really is something where labor has had a chance to reach out to the community and make new friends and new allies. Finally, something that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm sure yours as well, our dear friends up in Findlay, and we have a group of over 1,000 workers up there that members of the steel workers that were locked out now, and I understand workers from Crystal Sugar are going to be coming through this coming weekend, and there's a big rally scheduled for the 25th to hook both the Crystal workers up with Finley workers and develop a national walk for justice and fighting to stop this kind of thing. We know the Finley workers were locked out after the union went out and brought all kinds of new orders to them, and over $300 million worth of orders, and then we're locked out right before Christmas. So what's your comment on that type of so-called negotiations?
You brought something that's good for your listeners to know. On February 27th, there's going to be a demonstration, which begins a couple weeks before that date. There are workers at Crystal Sugar in the Red River Valley in Minnesota and North Dakota, where workers there are locked out. So there's going to be a caravan starting in Fargo, North Dakota, going from Fargo, North Dakota to Findlay, Ohio, and stopping at the Cooper Tire plant on February the 27th for a big demonstration there at 4:30 p.m. They're going to stop along the way between Fargo and Findlay and have a conversation with different communities about the injustice going on with the lockout at Crystal Sugar with it's the baker and confectionery workers there, and with the steel workers finishing up in Cooper Tire at the lockout and the unfair labor practice there at Cooper Tire, just bringing awareness to the plight of these workers here and connecting Fargo to Findlay in that regard. So we'd like to have a strong showing on February 27th at the Cooper Tire plant in Findlay, Ohio at 4:30.
And this is not something that we're telling only union workers. This is something that really is a question in a real sense of rising tides floating all boats, or if the corporations are successful, sinking boats.
It's an effort to stand up and fight back against the economic injustice that's happening at workplace after workplace. These workers at Cooper Tire took a concessionary contract several years ago. All the while, they've been working very hard and making a huge profit for Cooper Tire. That's undeniable. And they just want to continue to ask for more concessions and more concessions and more concessions, to the point where the workers said, we can't take any more concessions. So this is about economic justice. This is about standing up for workers in your community, whether you're union or non-union. So we'd like to have a strong demonstration from the community on February the 27th there in Findlay.
We really want to thank Ohio AFL-CIO President Tim Burgum for his time here today. We know you're really busy, and it's a tough time right now, but really want to thank Tim, not just for his time, but for his leadership here, and especially in reaching out beyond the organized labor community to our friends and potential allies out there and going forward. So, Tim, we really want to appreciate your time, and not only as a leader but a dear friend. And we hope that folks got a lot out of this interview, because I certainly did.
Well, it's good to be with you, Bruce.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay.